Hello and welcome to Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, talking all things golf in Wisconsin, here's Gary and Rob. Talking.Golf is sponsored by Iron Jock, our most comfortable sponsor yet. Why is that? Iron Jock is advanced performance gear that infuses pure silver ion into every piece of apparel through a proprietary process called silver ion technology. This technology kills 99.9% of the bacteria and fungus caused when you sweat, and it does that for the lifetime of the gear. No other brand offers this world-class antimicrobial protection, comfort, and performance. Join Iron Jock Nation and get yours now at ironjock.com. That's ironjock.com. With Gary D'Amato, I am Rob Hernandez. This is Talking.Golf. I'm in just outside Phoenix. Gary at the home office in Caledonia. Gary, I don't know what it's like by you, but we've had some of the most humid weather during monsoon season down here in Arizona. The Iron Jock technology can be used by just about everybody playing golf this week in the West Valley of Phoenix, Arizona. How about by you?
Yeah, Rob, we had that hot, humid weather break a couple of days ago with some storms, and I played golf today at the Bog with Wisconsin Golf Hall of Famer Gary Menzel, which was a treat, and the weather was perfect. I mean, it was probably 78 degrees, low humidity, and we breezed around the Bog and had a great time.
Well, that is great. Boy, Gary Menzel, that is a blast from the past. I've mentioned his name, you know, talking to Jim Dooning, who won the Senior Am qualifier to get in out at the Country Club of Detroit next month or later this month. And, I mean, he's one of several guys that have had great success at the senior amateur level nationally. How's Gary doing?
Gary's doing really well. He doesn't play much golf anymore, Rob. He hits balls and he practices, but he said this was only his second 18-hole round of the year. And he said he's played a couple 9-hole rounds. No special reason. He just kind of lost his competitive zeal, I guess. But we had a really good time on the course, and he got off to a slow start. But after that, he played, you know, the last 14, 15 holes. He played very well, like the Gary Menzel I remember.
Well, Gary D'Amato, Gary Menzel, those are two of the great Garys in all of golf in Wisconsin. So I'm glad you guys had a good time. That's what's up with Gary D'Amato. What's up here on Talking.Golf, powered by our Instagram page at wis.golf. Our Instagrammer, Megan Augustine, has been going great guns with our Instagram page and with a lot of the stuff that we're doing off of the USAM this week, the Senior Am qualifying this week, the Lake Arrowhead Invitational on the junior golf scene earlier this week, and I'm sure she's going to break the internet when she gets the Eric Popovich story up, and we'll get to that in just a second. But also, she's doing great things with marketing, and we now have Wisconsin.Golf stickers. That's right, stickers. So I'm hoping to swing by before I head to the airport on Sunday to pick up a stack of Wisconsin.Golf stickers. Gary, the kids love putting stickers on everything, laptop computers, and these Hydro Flask water bottles are just two of the things that stickers go on these days. I remember stickers from when I was a kid. They would go on backpacks and maybe those homemade book covers that you would make for your textbooks. These days, kids don't even know what textbooks are.
No, they don't. Rob, I'm too old for stickers. The only stickers I remember are little gold stars that went on my report cards. That's all. That's the only stickers I was ever exposed to. But yeah, they're pretty cool. I've seen the stickers that we've ordered. Megan got them, and I even want some. I'm gonna splash some of those things all over
your golf bag. I think that's what they should call. But we'll try to get some of those and have those at the Wisconsin State Open next week when we're up there at Pine Hills and at Black Wolf Run. But speaking of gold stars, a gold star for Gary D'Amato for finding this story. And it's now up, and it'll be on our site through the weekend. It's one that you've got to read, folks. It's about Cherokee Country Club assistant professional Eric Popovich. And Gary D'Amato, tell us what a play PAT is and why Eric Popovich had to go 93 times over 30 years to pass it.
Yeah, Rob, the PAT test is the player ability test. And it's a 36 hole. You play 36 holes in one day. It's for aspiring PGA professionals who want to become Class A professionals. You cannot become a Class A professional in the PGA of America unless you pass the PAT. And the PAT is two rounds, and it's based off of the course rating. And it's pretty simple. You just take the course rating, multiply it by two, and add 15 shots. So in other words, if the course rating is 70, that'd be 140 plus 15, that'd be 155. So the player would have to shoot 155 or better to pass the PAT. And Eric Popovich, over 30 years and 93 attempts, he finally passed it on his 94th attempt. You got to give him a lot of props for perseverance and not giving up, right, Rob?
Well, especially in a PAT, and I, again, the story just posted about an hour ago to our site here. We try to get a good what we call a good reader type of story for the weekend, and this really, I think, Gary, is as good as we've had in a long time, because a PAT is, I guess, for a lot of the club professionals, is akin to the old PGA Tour qualifying school. These days, it's the Korn Ferry Tour qualifying school, where, you know, there at least you get 72 holes to prove yourself at each stage to move on. This is a one-day deal, as you said. And for a lot of guys who want to be involved in the game of golf, but again, if you're good enough to play professionally, you know, you should pass a PAT in your sleep, but most of those players are the ones that are out chasing the Korn Ferry Tour or the PGA Tour. These are just guys like you and me, Gary, who would love to stay involved in the game, but because of how the PGA of America structures that process to become an actual, you know, A1 Class A club professional, I mean, this is the Super Bowl of golf for these folks. And I mean, everyone who's in the PGA of America right now, I'm sure, Gary, has a story like Eric Popovich's, however, not 93 times worth. I mean, it's probably the one or two times they missed and then qualified on the third try or the fourth try. It's a little bit like some people's driver's test, maybe. And just to read your lead here, he's on the 17th fairway at Leesburg Country Club, and he's got this opportunity to do something that he's tried 30 years to do. And anyone who's played Reedsburg Country Club, the two toughest greens on the golf course and two of the tougher holes are 17 and 18. They're some of the original holes on the course with, greens that slant from back to front and are always slippery. And how did he manage to kind of get himself to finish this off? And was he in danger of not passing at that point in the proceedings there in that 36-hole event?
Well, he shot a 75 in the first round of the two rounds, and then he was two over par through 14 holes, Rob, and in really good shape to make it. And he's thinking on the 15th tee, I can bogey out, and I'm going to pass this PAT. Well, he bogeys 15, he bogeys 16. Now he's getting a little bit nervous. He hits it in the fairway on 17, and then he snap hooks an 8-iron of all clubs out of bounds. So he one-putted for a double bogey on 17, so he still had a couple of shots to spare. He told me that the head pro at Cherokee, Matt Kennedy, told him when you get to 18, just hit 2 7-irons because it's a short par four, but it's tight. And so he hit a 7-iron in the fairway. He hit a 7-iron on the green. He had a 20-footer for birdie. He legged it to 2 feet. And then he said he literally hit his par putt 3 inches. He said, I was so nervous, I almost whiffed. But luckily, he gathered himself and knocked in the bogey. And with tears in his eyes, you know, he passed the PAT with 3 shots to spare. So just a really good story about a guy, just kind of an everyman who just had this dream to become a Class A professional and was always, you know, he's been an assistant pro and even a head professional, non-affiliated at golf courses, but always had this dream of becoming a Class A pro. And this was the stumbling block, and he finally got past it.
So you'll want to read this on our website at wisconsin.golf. It's about Eric Popovich, assistant professional at Cherokee Country Club, home course to Steve Stricker, owned by Steve's father-in-law, Dennis Tiziani. And that's where, you know, a lot of the greats have come through in the Madison area. And you'll also want to read what Eric Popovich does on the weekends. And we're not even going to, we're, we're going to tease that, Gary, and our listeners will figure out why when they go to the story, because it's pretty funny. But I think it's great. And when you were mentioning the story in our weekly meeting earlier this week, Gary, you know, I mentioned that, you know, my daughter tried to qualify twice with the PAT after, you know, fairly successful career at UW Stout and missed by a couple of shots both times, then settled into a job where she doesn't need to be a professional, working for the Minnesota Golf Association. But after she started working up at the MGA, they changed the rules where you can actually, if you're a former collegiate player, within, I think it's 5 years of finishing your college career, you can use 36 hole scores from your college career that would qualify based on that slope rating that you were talking about. And a lot of the former college kids have done that. Eric Popovich didn't have that luxury. I'm sure he's never shot the scores that he shot at Reedsburg any time in his life. And there are a lot of club professionals that are like that. And let's be clear too, Gary, you don't have to pass the PAT to be involved in the game. It gives you opportunities to make, maybe maximize income when you then go on to the business schools and get the best jobs. A lot of courses require Class A membership, but we also have a lot of club professionals, teaching professionals that are not affiliated with the PGA of America, and they do a fine job as well.
They do, Rob. Yeah, you're right. You do not have to pass PAT to declare yourself a professional and work in the business, run a golf course, sell merchandise, give lessons. It's just the cachet of being a Class A PGA of America member that you don't have in that case. And that's something that Eric Popovich just has been chasing for 30 years. So it's a kind of a nice dream come true story for him. And talked to Dennis Tiziani, and Dennis was really happy for him. Everybody likes the guy. He's really popular with the members there at Cherokee. So he's gotten a lot of congratulatory, you know, handshakes, pats on the back. A couple members have given him cards, you know, congratulating him. So it's good to see that somebody has a dream and doesn't give up on it.
Absolutely. And that's a story, again, just posted to wisconsin.golf here on Friday. And go to that. It'll be there through the weekend and before a busy week next week that we'll get to in a minute. Speaking of chasing dreams, a lot of others that have had that that dream type of thing. And one of them is one of our Wisconsin caddies on the PGA Tour, Alex Gaugert, had a somewhat of a dream come true, I guess you'd say, Gary. He was on the bag for Erik van Rooyen last weekend in the alternate field event from the WGC tournament on the PGA Tour schedule out at the Barracuda Championship. And Erik van Rooyen wins the modified Stableford scoring system format tournament with 50 points, makes an unbelievable birdie on 18 to close it out, and wins the $630,000 first prize for his first PGA Tour victory. They were former teammates, Eric and Alex, at the University of Minnesota. And we figured over the weekend, Gary, based on the going rate for caddies these days in the PGA Tour, pretty good payday for Alex Gaugert.
Yeah, it's normally 10% of the winnings for a victory. So 630,000, 10% of that, if my math is correct, Rob, is 63 grand, which is a nice little chunk of change there for Alex. When you get a guy, when you get on the right bag as a caddy on the PGA Tour, it can be a very lucrative living. It can be a very tough way to live when your guy is missing cuts. It's not a lot of fun, but to have something like this happen and have the guy that you're caddying for win a tournament, that's a big deal. That's a big deal for Alex and Eric now. Just solidifies their already good relationship and good, maybe a lot of good things to come for that pair now.
Well, and I talked to Alex's dad, Jim Gaugert, who's a longtime professional in the Wisconsin section, and a really, you know, a guy who chased the tour back in the late 80s himself. And he said that the thing that he noticed the most about what happened last weekend was how well Eric and Alex, communicated on the golf course. And that's something that's ever evolving between player and caddy. And, you know, sometimes, Gary, and we've seen this with Jordan Spieth, who had a longtime, you know, friend who's had Michael Greller as his caddy, and with Ricky Fowler, who he's had a boyhood friend as his caddy. You know, there are highs and lows with that. And, you know, you never want your friendship to get in the way of a you know, of a working relationship, but it appears that that seems to be developing nicely for the two former Gopher teammates here on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, Rory McIlroy has a friend on his bag. Of course, Phil Mickelson has had his brother Tim on his bag, and Dustin Johnson has had his brother on his bag. And of course, our own Steve Stricker has had his wife on his bag, so and his brother-in-law. So yeah, it, really good to see. Happy for Alex. Rob, you and I have known him. You've known him probably longer than me, but he's a quality guy, and really happy for him to see this happen to him and Eric.
Well, and you know, we've got three guys caddying on a regular basis. You know, Alex, his brother Austin, who's on the bag of Chris Ventura. In fact, I talked to texted with Austin this week because he's had to pull out of the Wisconsin State Open next week. You wrote about Austin winning the Wisconsin PGA Match Play Championship just a couple weeks ago, where he beat Jim Schumann in the final. And so, you know, both those guys can play. And but Austin's going to be on the bag he's on the bag this week out at the Wyndham for Chris. And I believe they're going to miss the cut, which means that they had to finish second or higher to get in the PGA Tour playoffs. So now they drop down and go into the Korn Ferry Tour playoffs, and the top 25 finishers in the playoffs there get exempt status for next year. So he'll have an opportunity to regain PGA Tour standing through that. And obviously, as you said, that will be potentially lucrative for Austin, as those two have just started that relationship here during the middle of the summer. And then John Turcotte has been working for a number of guys, Sepp Straka until recently, and now it appears Sepp has gone with his brother on his bag. And so John picked up another bag, Nate Lachey. And now this week, Nate has a different guy in the bag at the Wyndham. So, you know, but again, these guys like John, who, you know, a former State Open champion a couple times over, you know, a good player in his own right, you get in that mix and you're not unemployed for long. It's just a matter of networking and figuring out who needs a veteran caddy, because there's always a new kid coming up that needs that experience.
Yeah, for sure, Rob. Yeah, it's a transitory job, and very rare is the caddy player team that sticks together for years and years and years. Sometimes players just need a change. You know, they're in a little bit of a rut. It's not the caddy's fault, but they just need to change something up somehow. Get a fresh set of eyes on them, and just get a fresh start. So caddies go from player to player sometimes, and you know, all those guys you named have picked up some pretty good bags, and you know, we'll probably continue to do so.
And the biggest thing is they enjoy it. And much like Eric Popovich, who wouldn't be chasing his PAT test for as long as he did, you know, there's something about the game of golf that, you know, has a fun factor to it. And for these guys, you know, they had their, you know, they had their day in the sun competitively. Some chose not to do it, you know, and grind it out with the club in their hand instead with a bag over their shoulder. And I think it's pretty cool. We got a couple guys, actually three Wisconsin golfers competing this week at the U.S. Amateur Championship at Gary's home course out at Oakmont. And one made the cut into match play and had himself a very eventful round of 64 match. And that was defending State Open champion Harrison Ott, who had a 3-up lead on with 6 holes to play on Michael Thorbjornsson, the Western Amateur Champion and also a Stanford golfer. Harrison, of course, going to be a fifth-year senior at Vanderbilt this year. And then Michael Thorbjornsson rattles off 5 birdies in a row at Oakmont, Gary, to win the match 2-1. After seeing the qualifying scores during the stroke play qualifying to determine the 64 match play participants, I couldn't imagine 5 birdies, period, let alone 5 in a row at the end of a match on the back nine at Oakmont to win a match. But that tells you what kind of golfer Michael Thorbjornsson is.
No kidding. Yeah, having played Oakmont a couple of weeks ago, Rob, I mean, I just can't imagine someone making 5 birdies in a row on that golf course. And even Thorbjornsson said, you're not supposed to do that at Oakmont, and you're not. I mean, that might be a first. I mean, who knows? At least in tournament golf, there might be. Johnny Miller made a bunch of birdies in that 63, but he didn't make 5 in a row. Just incredible play by him. And if you're Harrison Ott, you just tip your cap. What can you do? I mean, Harrison played a very, very good match. He had a good, you know, he had a good day. He had a good tournament. But when a guy does something like that, and there's nothing you can do about it.
And with the U.S. Amateur, it's always fun, Gary, when it was held at Erin Hills 10 years ago, I believe, this year.
Yeah.
It was, you know, they always have a companion course. Erin Hills paired up with Blue Mound when Hazeltine's hosted the U.S. Amateur. They pair up with the Chaska Town course. And it's always interesting to see the scoring differential between courses. Blue Mound and Erin Hills, surprisingly, I believe at one point, you know, one of the 2 days, Blue Mound actually played tougher than Erin Hills, which isn't always the way it's supposed to go, but it can go that way. Here, it was what we expected. Oakmont played a lot tougher than Longview Golf Club, which was the companion course, by almost 6 strokes in the first round, a little bit tighter in the second round. But we'll talk in a minute about the two courses at the State Open. But, you know, you've covered a USAM at Erin Hills, and it's kind of neat that way because it tests different abilities to, in this case, you know, you got to go low one day and then you just kind of got to tread water the next.
Yeah, you're right. Blue Mound did play tougher at least one day and maybe both. I don't really recall, but two different, completely different kind of golf courses. And that's, I don't know what Longview is like, but I'm guessing it's dramatically different than Oakmont, which is, you know, all the trees have been taken out at Oakmont and they got the, you know, the fairways that stimp out at like 12 on the stimp meter. I mean, that course just is firm and fast. I can't imagine Longview is anything quite like that, but it's neat when there's two courses that are really different because you're right. It tests players in different ways and good to see that Harrison made it through second year in a row, right? To match play.
Second time in 3 years. I think he missed in between. The other time that he qualified for match play, he lost to Victor Hovland, who's now in contention for a Ryder Cup spot. So he hasn't had a really favorable draw either time. And obviously with the Thor Bjornsson being at Stanford and having just won the Western Amateur, which is in many eyes a precursor to the USAM, you know, that was a tough draw as well. Gary, I wanted to ask you too, the other big news to come out of Oakmont this week was that Oakmont and Marion, two of the classics in Pennsylvania, added to the list of what we call anchor courses for the U.S. Open rota, with Marion getting a U.S. Open in 2050. I hope we're around for that one. What did you think, having played Oakmont, that now all of a sudden it's the apple of the USGA's eye? It always has been, but it's this kind of takes it to a whole nother level. It's in the category of Pebble Beach and Pinehurst.
It is, yeah, absolutely. And it makes you wonder what the future of Erin Hills is in regards to the U.S. Open. Now that I look at the schedule, Rob, the U.S. Open is scheduled out to 2030 with the exception of 1 year, 2028. And quite a few of those years after 2030 now are filled in. So, you know, I know there's some hope that the U.S. Women's Open will go well in 2025 at Erin Hills and that the USGA will then award the U.S. Open to Erin Hills in 2028. But there's going to be lots of competition. And so this announcement, it bodes well, certainly, for the great classic courses like Oakmont and Marion. But I guess it doesn't bode as well for courses like Erin Hills, Chambers Bay, and some of the more recent U.S. Open venues that hope to get it a second time.
So that takes us through What's Up here, a very busy What's Up on Talking.Golf. What's Up powered by our Instagram account at wis.golf. I don't think I got to that part. I was so excited about the stickers in our open, but Megan Augustine, our marketing specialist, doing some great stuff on Instagram. And you want to go there at wis.golf to follow what's going on at wisconsin.golf on that social media platform. The other one that we've been pumping the information into is our Twitter handle at wis.golflive, where all results go as they go onto our website. And this week, yesterday, the debut of high school girls golf results on our site. The season got underway with practice Monday. First tournaments were Thursday. And you can look at wis.golflive on Twitter for the latest results as they go onto our site, and they are powering our What's Next segment. What's next is the Wisconsin State Open, played on two courses next week, Pine Hills Country Club in Sheboygan, and then the anchor course at Black Wolf Run's Meadow Valleys course. Golfers will play one round at Pine Hills, one round at Meadow Valleys each of the first 2 days, And then the 36 hole finale will be Wednesday at Black Wolf Run. Gary, we were talking before we came on the air that we don't think there'll be that big a difference between Pine Hills and Meadow Valleys. However, I think in maybe getting to the average scores, it'll be a different experience at the two courses. Pine Hills, known for its great greens, and even though it plays like 6,500 yards, it can be tight. Meadow Valley is a little bit more forgiving off the tee, but you can't fall asleep with a lot of the Pete Dye diabolical things that he put on that course. And then the greens there are equally as good as Pine Hills. Maybe won't be quite as fast, but they're undulating. You can't forget about that.
Yeah, and Rob, we looking at the field, what a great field we have for this state open. Just it's a who's who of Wisconsin, you know, great Wisconsin golfers of the last 20 years or so. A lot of former champions in, a lot of guys, many tour players have come back. Tim Cantwell is coming back. I haven't seen Tim in a long time. I think you bumped into him somewhere, Rob, recently. But it's a great field and two great golf courses. I can't wait to cover it with you. Are you flying in Sunday night, Rob?
Flying in Sunday night, and then you and I will drive up on Monday morning. I think I'll be based at Pine Hills. You'll be based at Meadow Valleys, and then we'll tag team the final round over at Meadow Valleys. But my head's swimming with two things. I've spent the day shopping for golf cars. We'll get to that in a minute. But and the breaking down the state open field, much like I did the state amateur field. And I tell you what, you are right, Gary. It is incredible, the talent that's been lined up here for the state amateur. Nine former champions in the field: Jordan Elson of Kenosha, Ryan Helminen of Appleton, Max Hosking of Madison, Harrison Ott, fresh off of his USAM appearance, coming back to defend his title, Jim Schumann, who has had great success at both courses, Andrew Steinhofer of Madison, Eddie Teresa of Waukesha, Ben Walter coming back for the first time since, I believe, 2012 when the tournament was at Racine Country Club. He just turned 50. And then, of course, Dan Woltman, four state open titles, trying to join a very elite group with five. And he is dialing back on his competitive career. And after having his wife and he had a child, this past spring, and but still looking to contend at Black Wolf Run, where I believe he won at least one of those four titles. He's won two as an amateur, two as a professional. Four of the last five, actually all five of the last state amateur champions in the field: Hunter Eichhorn, Pearson Hunt, Thomas Longbella, Matt Tolan, and the field just goes on from there. I noticed today a few sponsors exemptions, and two of them of note: Jordan Hahn, Corn Ferry Tour golfer who's been playing a lot in the last month on the Form A Tour. That's the Form Tour, I should say, Forme. You might have seen it on some of the Golf Channel scrolls, and that's the Canadian Tour for American golfers this year for those that can't go across the border because of COVID restrictions. And he had a great week this week at the Fuzzy Zeller event down in Indiana, and he's coming back on an exemption. And then Mike Johnston, who won the WIA State Tournament the first year it was held at University Ridge. You and I remember Mike from his club pro days in Wisconsin. He's now a teaching professional down here in Arizona. He's coming back, and I was just texting with a guy that is busy himself, Brandon Johnston, the girls golf coach and boys golf coach at Franklin High School, is going to take time out from the girls season. He qualified for the state open up at Whistling Straits and on the Irish course. And so you've got cousins in the field. You've got three father sons, Michael and Mason Hopped of DePere, Charlie Brown out of Racine, and his son Connor, who's a golfer up at UW Eau Claire. And then the last two, you'll like this one. The Sponge, Dave Spangler. He's Dave Spangler Jr. There's a Dave Spangler Sr., but Dave Spangler Jr. is the club pro at longtime club pro at Northbrook Country Club in Luxembourg, where they've had to deal with a lot of Mother Nature's wrath the last couple of weeks. And his son David, who played college golf, I believe, at Northern Iowa for a while, and is also in the field. So you've got this is just unbelievable, the field that we've got lined up for this. Two courses and 204 golfers, a who's who of golf in Wisconsin, Gary.
And And even Mia Seaman, let's not forget about her. I can't wait to see how she fares against the men, playing from the same tees. Wonderful player, and won the Women's State Open earlier this year. So, yeah, great field, Rob. I can't wait to get up there and cover it with you.
Yeah, and that's a good point. It's the first year that WPGA has extended an exemption to the Women's State Open champion. I think it's a long time coming. I think it's a good year. I think she'll fare well at Pine Hills because of the distance there. It can't top out more than 6,500 yards. And D1 golfers, Mia's at South Dakota State University. They play usually in the 6,000 to 6,200 range, depending on the setup. And so that will be in her comfort zone. And to be honest, Gary, all the young golfers that'll be playing in the field, whether they're the current high school golfers, current college golfers, almost all of them have great experience at the Meadow Valleys course because Black Wolf Run and the Kohler courses have been nice enough to host the Players Tour event there, a 36-hole event the last, dozen years. And so a lot of these kids play that course, albeit at a somewhat shorter distance, but they know the greens and they know the layout, so that won't be a shock to them. And Mia's in that group as well. We've got a lot of mini tour players coming back. And I should mention too, I mentioned Austin Gaugert had the WD, a couple other guys that have withdrawn. Kevin Van Rossum, the amateur out of Heartland with a wrist injury, he's out. David Roche thought about playing, but he's one of the more popular golf instructors, especially at the junior ranks in the state. And he texted me, said that he just didn't feel comfortable playing. He's only played five or six times and he's practiced even less. He spends more time on the practice tee with his students than he does of himself on his own game. And so he's out. And then Jim Lemon, the 2013 State Open champion, was hoping to be in a trial for the cancer he's fighting that you've written about, Gary. And because of that, was not doing the chemotherapies for a couple periods, and so he's fighting to get back to where he was in his battle with cancer, and because of that, he hasn't played a whole lot, and he's going to sit out this one. So our thoughts and prayers are certainly with Jim Lemon, really one of the good guys in Wisconsin golf, and I know that his presence will be missed. He's a popular guy. Won his state open in 2013 after he'd stopped playing on the Canadian tour. And that's the one tournament now that he plays every year, or at least has until this year. And so I know what it means for him not to be there this year.
Yeah, Jim played well last year at Blue Mount. There are some things more important than golf, Rob. So certainly our thoughts and prayers are with Jim and his family as he courageously fights cancer. We're all pulling for you, Jim.
And, again, we've got a great cross-section of young golfers, old golfers. One of the kids that I talked to this week, Caden Nam, you covered him winning the state junior last week. He followed that up with a runner-up finish this week at the Lake Arrowhead Invitational and has jumped to number one on the WPGA Junior Boys standings for Player of the Year status. And he qualified fifth out of the qualifier over at La Crosse Country Club. And he's red hot. And, again, you just never know. Pearson Hunt and Adam Miller, who played at the U.S. Amateur in the field. And, it really should be a kind of an interesting state open, Gary. As you look back at the more recent ones, if you were to kind of pinpoint who is the kind of golfer best built to contend in the state open, what kind of golfer has that been? And does that change with the two courses we have in play this week?
That's a really good question, Rob. You got to go with the guys who have played well, I think, this summer. You always go with form, I think. I think Steve Stricker is looking at the form of guys to pick for when he has make his at-large picks in a couple of weeks. Current form, I think, is really important. And in that regard, you got to like guys like Pearson Hunt and Harrison Ott, who played well in the state. Pearson obviously winning the state amateur and Harrison playing well in the U.S. amateur. And they played, they played a ton of college golf on courses that had similar setups to what they'll see in the state open. So, and then the mini tour guys who are playing a lot of mini tour, Neil Johnson, he's in the field, right?
Yep. Neil's there.
So there's guys like that too, that have played a lot of golf on a lot of different courses. And, it's certainly wide open. I think you can take, is it a 204 or 212 player field?
204 guys in the field, including Mia. And and then a couple other, mini tour guys to watch would be George Kneiser out of Oconomowoc, who's qualified for a number of Korn Ferry events. And then Peter Webb, who's had some great success on the Dakotas Tour this year. And, so that will be and Kaylor Steger, who battled in a different division than our own Gary D'Amato last week. Well, we haven't talked about that. That happened since our last Talking Dot Golf. I can't believe you almost let that one slide. I should have introduced you as the third flight champion in the Racine County Open, Gary D'Amato. I might have to go back and dub that in. But Kaylor Steger, who won championship flight, he'll be a contender. You'll be back with your pen next week. So I guess that tells you where third flight gets you at the Racine County Open.
Yeah, and it's a good thing I'll have a pen, not a golf club in my hand, because people would be scattering, Rob. just real quickly today, I was 4 over par at the ball going on to the 17th hole, made a 9, just a routine 9 on number 17 and shot 80. So that tells you why I'm not in the state open field. But it's a great field.
Yeah, you're not going for your PAT either with that kind of closing ability.
No, I'm not, and it's a good thing. I think there's, if you look at that field, Rob, I think there's 40 to 45 guys who could win the state open. I really think that there's that many guys who you have to look at and say, and you go down the list, he could win. So I'm excited. It's going to be a good week.
Yeah, it used to be where you would pick out maybe, three groups on each side in each wave. And, the winner is going to come out of those. But now, I mean, it is a who's who from, sun up to sundown, basically. And, even though the field was expanded, which means the qualifying might have been a little bit easier, the top qualifiers coming out of qualifying are still very good. George Kneiser and Ryan Isaacson, a mini tour player out of Eau Claire, finished 1-2 at the qualifier up at Minocqua Country Club. And, that's how much it meant for them to come back and try to qualify. And there's a lot of guys like that. So as competitive as ever, obviously at 204 players, only the second time. This was the format 2 years ago when they played two of the three courses down at Geneva National in Lake Geneva. So this is only the second time that we've had a field this large. So again, Monday at Pine Hills Country Club in Sheboygan and the Meadow Valleys course, the Anchor course at Black Wolf Run in Kohler. We'll have complete coverage on Wisconsin.golf, and we'll have our live coverage up and going throughout the day at the top of our page on Wisconsin.golf. And Gary, for me, it'll be a nice respite from golf car shopping. I never knew that golf car shopping would be as, contentious as it is when you move into a community that where the second car in your garage is a golf car. It's, I've dreamed of this day, but now who knew that, gas versus electric, four-seater versus two-seater, do you get one that has, all the bells and whistles, the 10-inch tires versus 12-inch tires. There's two different kinds of tires for a golf course. Gary, you and I have been, spoiled by the great golf courses in our state in Wisconsin by the fact that they provide the golf cars when you rent them and you don't have to worry about what they look like. As long as they run and get you through 18 holes, that's all that matters.
I have even not a clue what a golf car costs, Rob. What's the range, at least, from the cheapest model to the Cadillac of golf cars? What are we talking about?
Well, that's a good question, Gary, because first of all, I've been told that golf cars haven't changed much in the last 5 to 10 years. So if you are getting a 2022, it's not going to look or function much different than a 2016. You can get previous year models for in the maybe $6,000 to $8,000 range. But if you want to go brand new, you're looking at probably a minimum of $10,000. But most of the ones in the 2022 range are $12,000 to $14,000 to start with. And then it depends on your extras. You want to know what a few extras are in a golf cart, Gary?
Yeah, as long as there's a beer cup for me, I'm good, Rob.
Well, it's two cup holders or four. And then, if you put golf balls in those cup holders, you might want a few more. So then those are add-ons. And then you've got the cooler because, in some places, not in the state of Wisconsin, I believe it's against state law to bring alcoholic beverages onto a golf course. But, when you're in this community here, they don't mind so much so that you can have a cooler as an add-on that kind of fastens onto the back of the golf cart. Obviously, the grass seed that you use to replace the many divots that you take, that's an add-on if you want to have your own little container of grass seed. And let's see what else. The USB ports to charge your phone, because I know you're always taking selfies and you're taking pictures of the courses you're playing. And if your phone dies, you're going to be lost. I know Patrick Koenig, the WSJ intern, would be lost without a USB port in his cart. So those are just a few of the things that even the roofs, what color roof do you want? What kind of seat? Out here in Arizona, Gary, you might have heard it gets hot in the summertime.
I've heard that.
You really don't want vinyl, so you need the cloth seats, and some are look like your car, like your Corvette, and others look like the carts out at Curry Park. You know what I mean? And they're just little basic vinyl. And I leaned on Jim Goggert, longtime sales rep for Harris Golf Cars in Wisconsin, to tell me, oh, gas versus electric is the biggest thing.
Yeah.
And so Jim suggested to me when we first started talking that, I'm probably a guy that would want a gas golf cart, because, if you play a lot of golf, those can usually handle it longer. Sometimes those, the batteries, even the best batteries, might not be able to handle a 36 hole day. Now, I haven't played 36 out here yet one day, but gas versus electric, the lead acid batteries have been the standard in the industry for a long time. But now, last few years, lithium batteries have come on. Lead acid, you've got to pour water in every other week to make sure that they stay, properly, I guess, hydrated, for lack of a better term. And lithium are maintenance free. You just kind of, you just charge them up, and then every 6-7 years, they're not sure because they haven't been around long enough to see how long they'll actually last. Then you have to, buy new ones for, like, I think Jim said they're about $4,000. So it's a little bit of an investment there, if you're going lithium, because at some point you're going to get a new golf cart or a new battery. And then Jim told me this week, there's also in the Yamaha golf cars that he sells, there's something called gel technology, which is used a lot in motorcraft motors and boats and things like that, watercraft stuff. And that's also maintenance free, but not really industry standard in golf cars yet, but it's coming. I mean, again, when you get to be retired, Gary, you don't want to be watering your golf car batteries. You just want to be out playing golf.
Yeah. Water your plants, maybe your garden, but not your golf cart batteries. The gas carts they're making today are so much quieter than the ones that, from 20 years ago, those things were loud. They're making some quiet gas carts these days. But Rob, when you're in Phoenix, I mean, are there used golf cart lots? I mean, how do you shop for a golf car? Where do you go?
Well, and that's what really blew my mind today, Gary, because the our friends that we went and saw some golf carts, we went and saw a couple four-seaters today, and they have theirs. So there's, to answer your question, not only are there used golf cart lots, and I saw the Yamaha dealer up in Youngstown is on Wisconsin Avenue of all places. So I kind of felt there's a karma going on there. But they've got used golf carts. But the other big thing here is there are companies that take golf cart parts and actually build them from scratch and then sell basically their club car, their Easy Go, but they're all kind of like resurrected golf cart parts, and they look like brand new. I mean, the golf carts I saw today, you wouldn't be able to tell if they were 2014 or 2022. And so they're, not only are they used, but there's rebuilt golf carts that have become very popular out here and seem to survive the heat, survive the cool months in the wintertime, as cool as it gets. But so again, it just really boggles the mind what this golf cart industry is like, especially I'm sure in retirement places like Arizona here and down in Florida. And, I'm just looking for one to get around the community, play my 18 holes of golf 3 times a week, and then, be good with it. So it's still a work in progress. We've got some, we'll be looking at another place tomorrow. And then I'm going to put the golf cart thing on hold for the state open. Thank the Lord.
And Rob, no speeding tickets in your community. All right. Hold the speed down to, 15 miles an hour. All right.
Well, and that's the other thing, my college roommates who live here in the community, they have a golf cart that goes, 25 to 30 miles an hour. and one of the four seaters that they had at Yamaha, and for obvious reasons, they won't allow it to go more than 19, because if you've got someone on the back, you really don't want them spilling out, Gary. And so, but then my college roommates were telling me, well, you don't want to go to to dinner at the clubhouse or someplace in the community and then go back to somebody's house for the after dinner drinks and be the golf cart that's going 19 while everyone's going 25 and getting there first. And I'm going, really, really, that's an issue? Really?
Oh, Rob, I feel for you. I know you'll pick out a good one, and I know you'll go in style. You're going to get the one with the gold-plated rims and the speaker system, and you're going to have Rodney Dangerfield's golf bag on the back. So I'm looking forward to seeing. Send out a selfie when you finally buy one, Rob. Right?
And there's another option for you, Gary. The Bluetooth speakers, so you can play all the music that Rodney played in Caddyshack.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
there's
yeah.
Another thing. To close this conversation, Gary, this is one of those that we file under the category of first world problems. I don't think this is really life or death. And I've told my wife several times, as long as the darn thing runs and runs for 18 holes, I'm good with it. So you're right. We'll pick it out. We'll send a selfie, and we'll let you know how this goes. And hopefully, by the time the Ryder Cup rolls around, I'll have my golf cart waiting when I get back. But that wraps up what's next. What's next is the State Open and Rob's golf cart shopping. And what's next is powered by @wis.golf live. It's our Twitter handle where you can go for all the results, especially next week's Wisconsin State Open. And of course, during that, we'll still have every day here, especially as we go through the weeks leading up to the start of school. A robust schedule of high school girls golf and tournaments throughout the state. And you can look there for all of that. Last but not least, here on Talking.Golf, the Ryder Cup Report, powered by Kohler Golf, our host next week for the State Open. And this week, Gary D'Amato had the opportunity to write about something that's, unfortunately, I guess, whether we like it or not, Gary, it's going to take us away from the business of maybe the traditional Ryder Cup coverage, and that's the stuff that that prevented the Ryder Cup from being played in 2020 and carried over to 2021, and that's the COVID-19 with the Delta variant. But the PGA, can they mandate vaccines for the Ryder Cup members? That's been kind of the buzz here the last couple of weeks, especially that last week's World Golf Championship event after some comments by Bryson DeChambeau. You had a chance to talk to Harris English, who is number 9 in the point standing. So either going to make it on points with a couple more good weeks or potentially be a captain's pick. And what did he tell you about the situation and what's in store as it relates to COVID and the potential for maybe a vaccine mandate among the players?
Yeah, Harris is not vaccinated, which I found interesting. Because the PGA Tour is saying that 70% of players are vaccinated and 90% of caddies at this point. But Harris said if the PGA asks him to get a vaccine for the Ryder Cup, he will happily do so, because he said that's the last thing I would want to keep me from being on a team is not being vaccinated when I'm being asked to be vaccinated. So he would have no problem with it. He thinks that most of the players, if not all of them, would view it similarly and get the vaccine if they're not already vaccinated. But there's so many interesting questions with this, Rob. There's talk that they may bring more than each team, maybe bring more than 12 players to the Ryder Cup, one or two alternates in case someone tests positive. We're talking about attendance. Are we still going to have 40,000 fans or 35,000, whatever the number is? Is it going to be full attendance? And if so, will the PGA be asking everyone in the gallery to wear masks or show proof of vaccinations? There's so many things going on with this that and we're fast approaching the Ryder Cup, so some of these questions have to get answered pretty quickly here.
Well, and you're right, a lot of questions involved. I mean, we just came off an Olympics where we lost a couple of guys because of John Rahm and Bryson DeChambeau, because of COVID positive tests. They had to sit that out, and I'm sure the same stringent policies will be in place for the competitors as were in place for the Olympics, and rightly so. Now, I think something I saw on the local news out here, Gary, about an event back in the Midwest, but and that was Lollapalooza down in Chicago, the big music festival here a couple weeks ago, thousands upon thousands of people. And the health agents, the health officials in the Chicago area are saying it was not a super spreader event. And there might've been 200 and to 300 people that tested positive for COVID after that event, which isn't much more than a lot of your normal events, such as, maybe a baseball game an event of that magnitude. And I guess in that respect, that's positive. But, we've also seen cases increase, not only, throughout the country, but, even in Wisconsin, as I wrote my girls golf preview, this was a season that was split in two last year because of COVID. And, again, even for that, things could change. And the number of cases in Wisconsin in the time period I looked at last week was as large in volume as any time going back to February, which is, again, we thought we were through the worst of it, and now we're seeing a resurgence. So it will be interesting to see, A, how they monitor that, how they measure that, and then how fast they react to it.
Bryson DeChambeau made some interesting comments that he's not been vaccinated. He wants to save the vaccine for someone else because he doesn't need it, which in retrospect was not the smartest thing. But Bryson has put his foot in his mouth a few times this year. But yeah, because there's no shortage of vaccines according to the CDC. So there's no reason really, in my opinion anyway, not to get vaccinated. I know it's some people have politicized it, but and everyone, the people who aren't vaccinated talk about their freedom and they don't want people telling them what to do. And, this could get, we could go off on a tangent here, but.
I was going to say, Gary, 8 months ago when you're sitting in a hospital room wondering if you were going to beat COVID, probably couldn't wait for there to be a vaccine to take so that you would never even have to think about this again.
Yeah, my doctor, when I got out of the hospital, said wait 90 days and get vaccinated. And on day 90, I got my first shot, Rob. So there's no reason not to get vaccinated, but some people just have an aversion to it or don't want to do it. And we'll see how the players, react if the PGA of America tells them, we're strongly, strongly suggesting that you get vaccinated for the Ryder Cup.
And we have talked often about the challenges confronting American captain Steve Stricker, the Madison golfer who's had the task of being now the captain for going on 3.5 years now. And how do you gauge how a guy like Steve Stricker will handle this on top of everything else? The Bryson DeChambeau Brooks Koepka debate and trying to pick the team, hoping that Tiger Woods will be in the room, not knowing whether he's healthy enough to travel to Kohler. Steve Stricker sure picked a fine time to be the Ryder Cup captain. Then again, who would have thought this back in, 2000, 2005, when it was announced that Whistling Straits would get this, that we'd be in the situation we're in. The world sometimes spins at a very slow pace. In the last 12 months plus, it seems like this globe, at least around the world of golf, spins at a pace that we've never seen before.
Yeah, Steve, is facing some problems and some decisions that are unprecedented when it comes to the Ryder Cup. Obviously, I'm talking about the coronavirus and vaccine and all that stuff. And, two teammates who really don't like each other, in Brooks Koepka and Bryson DeChambeau. So there's a lot on Steve's plate. I talked to Dennis Tiziani, Steve's father-in-law, the other day about it, and he said Steve's going to handle it just fine. And even if America should go on to lose, the captain always, it's always the captain who gets criticized when they lose and the players who get praised when they win, right? Mm-hmm. So if the U.S. should happen to lose, there's going to be, people are going to find reason to criticize Stricker, whether it's who he picked as his at-large picks, who he paired in the team events, how they practiced, all that stuff is open to criticism. But Dennis said Steve's going to handle it no matter what comes his way. He's going to handle it just fine.
Well, again, it's coming up here in just over a month. It's hard to believe. And it's probably going to be the fastest month in the history of golf in Wisconsin as we count down the days after the state open next week, Gary. It really gets real in terms of looking ahead to the Ryder Cup because that's the next big thing on the schedule, at least of that magnitude. And it's going to be a whirlwind, and there'll be a lot more stories than a normal Ryder Cup in terms of who's going to play with who and how is the team going to get picked. I know that you've got that column great waiting to, you know, be written here about, you know, what Steve's options are and who might make the best six captain's picks. Again, you know, more captain's picks than ever before because of COVID. So again, it's just an unusual time, and it'll be here before you know it. Gary, I appreciate the time here on Talking.Golf. We'll chat again next week, we'll see you on Monday as we make the journey up to Whistling Straits. I'm sorry, Black Wolf Run.
Good luck cart shopping, Rob. And I'll see you in a couple days.
Thanks, buddy.
All right.
Gary D'Amato, I'm Rob Hernandez. This has been Talking.Golf, brought to you by our sponsor, Iron Jock, and our most comfortable sponsor yet. Why is that? Iron Jock is advanced performance gear that infuses pure silver into every piece of apparel through a proprietary process called silver ion technology. This technology kills 99.9% of the bacteria and fungus caused when you sweat, and it does that for the lifetime of the gear. No other brand offers this world-class antimicrobial protection, comfort, and performance. So join Iron Jock Nation and get yours now at ironjock.com. That's ironjoc.com. For Gary, I'm Rob. We'll talk golf again next week.